when you walk into the ring for the number one heavyweight of the world. You'll be ready, won't you? Why? Because I waited for 50 years to make you ready. You'll be able to spit nails, kid. Like the guy says, you're gonna eat lightning and you're gonna crap thunder. You're gonna become a very dangerous person.
Our show's name pays tribute to the Boer Trekkers of South Africa, who in 1838 soundly defeated 30,000 Zulus on the bank of the Nkomo River, thereafter called Blood River, from the water turning red with the blood of the slain. Miraculously, no Boer Trekker died and only three were wounded. Now your friend, Eddie Miller, will be your ambassador for tonight's show.
Well, good morning, good afternoon, good evening to all you precious Blood River Radio family out there listening in. Thank you so much for being in here. One good thing we have, guess what? We have our internet fixed now. We can download or unload, however you call it. I'm not the tech guy. Our archives are working. My website's working. I can get into my Blood River Radio emails. Thanks to our wonderful, wonderful webmaster. God bless him. It's all Greek to me, but he did it. And before I go further, I'd just like to wish Miss Lizzie. Miss Liz has a birthday. She is sweet 16, and she's running our board tonight. She does a fabulous job. I wished I was anywhere somewhere close to her expertise. I would be a lot better showman, a lot better media guy. But happy birthday, Miss Lizzie. Would you like to say hello to people, to the audience out there? She makes this show go. But anyway, happy birthday, Lizzie. That comes from the bottom of my heart. Where are you? Where are we? We are Blood River Radio. We are syndicated nationally by Liberty News Radio. Sam Bushman and his whole crew, Jay Harrison and his lovely family, Cameron and Lizzie. Like I said, Lizzie's running the board tonight. Your Blood River Radio. My name is Eddie the Bombardier Miller. And today's date, this is in case you'd like to know, it's February the 4th of the year by our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ Almighty, 2023. The only name under the sun which man can be saved, Jesus Christ Almighty, who died while we were yet sinners. He died on the cross, paid the sin price. That's true. We always say it, and it's always true. Also, people, if you've tuned in before, you know this is a Christian show. So we always go next after the opening show, we go to a prayer. So if you will bow your heads, people, we're going to say a quick prayer. Almighty God, thank you so much for getting me and the rest of my family through this hectic week. Thank you for bringing us in here safely this broadcast. If you will, Lord, let's do your work here. Continue to do your work on this microphone right here and out in the field. Let us do everything we do with your honor and glory in mind to make sure you get all the honor and glory. If you will, Lord, please always let us know. Never let us forget who the enemy is. We all know who the enemy is. It is those same people that said, give us Barabbas. Lord, if you will, let us please give us the wisdom and the courage always ride to the sound of the gunfire. And thank you, Lord, for all the wonderful co-hosts we have, all the wonderful citizens, the listeners we have, the family members we have. And I ask all this in Jesus' name. Amen. Lord, at people, you always know the next thing we always go to, we go to the donors and you've heard me say this every show. Without money, without donors, there would be no Blood River Radio and there would be no Liberty News Radio. It's that simple. It's cut and dried. And I would like to thank, my God, I love our donor. We have some donors, about two handfuls, that keep this program going. They really do. Because Lord knows I'm a broke. I mean, you would not believe how broke I am. And that's not a badge of honor. It just happens that way. But thank you so much for keeping this program on the air. And the donor for this current week is Jim. My precious Jim, his precious family. I'm looking right up at a little clip he sent me with his grandson's baseball team. That's several months old. I keep it clipped on my wall. He's from a great athletic family, an intellectual family. Thank you so much, Jim. And I'm going to read his. He sent me a great card a minute ago. I'm going to read it in just a second. Also, Ken. Ken Big Ben from Lynbrook, New York. I mean, man, he sends so much. These people, I know, you know, they're like me. They couldn't be that rich, but they sacrifice. And it makes me sad. It makes me want to cry. I get so full of emotion about that because I know they. It's just a handful of people. I had just a handful of hundreds of maybe thousands that listen that help us go. But Jim from Washington again and Ken from Lynbrook, New York, thank you so much for sending your precious donations, your great sacrifices in. Listen, y'all, I'm a very emotional guy. Jim from New York, my buddy Jim sent me this card. And on the front of it says, for someone special. He sent this with another donation. It says, sometimes a bond between friends holds more meaning than words can express. This is one of those times. It's a pleasure to celebrate you today, someone who grows more special and more treasured with each passing year. Then on the other side it says, dear Eddie, wishing you a day as special as you are, your friend Jimmy. I'm telling you what, people, that's what it's all about. You can absolutely, positively cannot buy that. There's no money on that. I mean, you can't buy it. I wouldn't trade that for anything. I wouldn't trade my friends. I wouldn't trade how my friends love me, the people that support this show. And I can name, you've heard me talk about them week after week after week. We love them to death. We love them as much as they love us. And their blood, their lifeblood that they sacrifice keeps us on the air. Well, people, you know, when I was with TPC, every April was Confederate History Week. And we've decided, us the crew, us Blood River Radio people, we decided that February is going to be German History Week. And, German History Month. German History Month. And, you know, Germany, we're going to cover the Holocaust, the so-called Holocaust, the Holocaust Buster. That's what we're going to cover starting tonight. We're going to cover also who the real villains were in the Second World War. This is going to be every February. We're going to talk about Dresden. We're supposed to have, if we can get him, Paul English will be on next week covering. Paul English was the sound. He was the voice for the audio book Hellstorm. Please pray for Tom Goodrich, Tom/ aka Mike Goodrich, because he's had a pretty bad stroke in August, and he can't come on. He's not ready to come back on. But Paul English did the audiobook, and Paul English knows that book inside and out. He knows the history of the Dresden inside out. We're going to try to hook him up next week. He has bad phone coverage. We're going to try to go through a computer and get him on. So that's what's on next week, God willing. But tonight, he'll be covering the bombing part. And we also like this month, we'd like to also cover the so-called Nuremberg trials. That's all part of German history. I'm going to tell you what, folks, there is no greater lie ever told in the history of the world than the so-called Holocaust. And we have the man, the very man who probably stands above all in the work he did in busting that big lie of the Holocaust. We have Fred Leutcher coming on tonight. We probably have to get him on again the 28th because we're not going to be able to cover it all tonight, I'm sure. But Fred Leutcher is an accomplished engineer. Just a quick bio. He grew up in Connecticut, I believe it was said, and his dad was in the prison system there. He grew up in the prison system. Fred went to engineering school, became an accomplished engineer, expert on gas chambers, recognized by Canada, United States of America, and some states in Germany as being the world's only expert on gas chambers. Fred was called to testify by the defense team, Ernst Sundell's defense team, to testify. They called him to go to Germany and go to Poland, Dachau, Auschwitz, all these so-called death centers to gather evidence for Ernst Sundell's trial. He told him ahead of time, I got to make this quick, that, hey, I believe in the Holocaust. You're probably sending the wrong man. You're probably going to get hung by my testimony. Ernst Sundell said, no, go ahead. We want you to go there anyway, because Ernst Sundell was an honest man. He wanted the truth. And the rest of the story, we're going to let Fred Leutcher tell you right before we go to break. Fred, how are you doing tonight, brother? Fred, you there, brother? Well, Fred's not answering right now, but we're going to get him back. I'll just continue on then. So anyway, Fred was, like we said, we hired by Ernst Sundell's team, And the fellow, I can never pronounce this right, his name right. He's deceased now, bless his heart. He was Mr. Holocaust. His last name was Farrison. I don't remember, Robert Farrison. I can never pronounce his name right. He was one of the people on their Ernst Sundell's team in Canada. Ernst Sundell was an artist, a great artist. He made his life, his living as an artist. A lot of people didn't know that. I didn't know it until Mr. Buddy sent me a book. Mr. Buddy being one of our great, one of our greatest donors and supporters, has been since day one. So anyway, we got Fred back right now, and I don't know, Fred, I've taken you all the way over to Germany when you were a Holocaust believer. You drank the Kool-Aid. You were born again believer in the Holocaust. You went to Germany, and tell them what happened, Fred.
Well, I was sent to. I was asked by Ernst Sundell's defense team. I was asked by Robert Farrison, who is a well-known professor, and he was working with Ernst Sundell. And I was asked to investigate the alleged gas chambers at Auschwitz-Birkenau in Majdanek. When I first met Forrest, and he asked me if I believed in the Holocaust, and I told him, I imagine I do. I said, that's the general consensus. I don't know. I really don't know anything
else. Hey, Fred, hold that thought. We have to go to our first commercial break. Fred, don't forget that. So you can go right back to that point. People, we have to take our first break, and we're going to go right back to eminent engineer Fred Leutcher about to bust the Holocaust. Be right back.
Okay, listen up, people. I'm beating the bushes for a few good men. I don't want you boys the alt-right. I want the hardcore of the hard-right. And I need you front and center, boots on the ground, at a minute's notice, in the streets, and I need your money. You know the problem that the whites of the world face. It's the all-too-real threat of global extermination. And you know what's going on in South Africa and Western Europe. And unless you're semi-comatose, you've already seen the first stages of white genocide unfolding in our country. Our culture is under constant full-scale attack by our enemy. The enemy never sleeps. They spend day and night wrecking the monuments and the graves of our beloved kin. They attack us physically everywhere we go. They've already taken the linen and our stone. Now they're coming after our flesh. And if you're not too squeamish, if you want to be part of the number one white advocacy group and the number one white civil defense group in the United States, then contact Eddie Bombardier Miller at BloodRiverRadio.com. And please, please donate. And God knows you need us as much as we need you. Thank you.
Have you ever had great honey? No, I mean really good, all-natural, raw honey. Well, now you can, thanks to localhoneyman.com. We can ship out our locally made honey all across the U.S. So don't worry, you won't miss out. Plus, Local Honeyman has so many different flavors, like Utah Wildflower, High Desert Delight, Happy Valley, and Blackberry, just to name a few. So purchase your delicious raw honey today at localhoneyman.com.
Do you treasure your liberty? Well, at LovingLiberty.net, we most certainly do. And we want to help protect your liberty, too. Become part of the family. Everyone knows that the core of any society is the family. Therefore, the government should foster and protect the integrity of its family, we the people. Won't you join us as a Loving Liberty sponsor to help us promote the principles in the 5,000-year leap? Let's restore the miracle that changed the world at LovingLiberty.net.
Dear Blood River Radio family, we're going to go back. We got Fred back. We had a small difficulty there hitting him on the phone. But Fred, I want you to know the credentials this man has, the qualifications he has. So if you will, Fred, tell the people about you, how you grew up in the Massachusetts penal system, your expertise, your engineer, et cetera, et cetera. So continue on, Fred.
Okay. Well, I used to go to work with my father. He was the superintendent of transportation at the state prison in Massachusetts that was the old one in Charlestown. He later moved the prison from Charlestown to Walpole to their new location. I had been going to work with them since I was 4 years old. I grew up with inmates, and I grew up as part of the prison system. When I was younger, inmates taught me to do all kinds of wonderful things. They taught me how to crack safe, pick lock. And I've never used anything for an illegal purpose, but it was quite an education, I'll tell you. But at any rate, I continued to go to work with him when he had removed the prison to Walpole, and up until the time I was about 17 years old. So I was fully familiar with the system, and it was an interesting education. I moved on from there. When I got older, I went to college, and I was working as an engineer. And I was asked by the steward of the prison system if I could take a look at their electric chair. I knew the steward well because he had worked there for years. And Massachusetts had just passed a law reinstating the death penalty. It was after the Furman decision from the Supreme Court. I spoke with him, they didn't do anything at that time because, as you may guess, states and the federal government, they take forever to do anything. Massachusetts ultimately never did anything because the law was declared unconstitutional, so they went back to square one again, and Massachusetts has no death penalty. But at any rate, my name was passed around because nobody else did this, and I was talking to people that were involved in the various states with electrocution, with hanging, and also with lethal injection. Lethal injection was new. Nobody knew how to do it. I was asked by the first state to implement it, was the state of New Jersey. They weren't the first ones to use it, but they were the first ones to tackle it, and they decided that they needed a machine, which is true. That's one of the major problems we have today. The states that are doing it do not have a machine because they no longer can buy off me because they can't hire me to work with them because of all the trouble I had with the Jewish organizations, and they threatened to pass legislation and everything to prevent me from helping them with their execution systems and procedures, so the inmates have been constantly tortured. But at any rate, New Jersey asked me to come down, and I had already had a track lid because I've been working with electrocution, and I met with the commissioner, deputy commissioner, two doctors, and the prison warden, and it was determined that they needed to do something, and what the commissioner had asked me, he said, this is totally new. Have you done anything with lethal injection? I said, no. I said, it's totally new. I said, all I've got is your statute to know what you need. And I says, I'll have to do it. I says, your doctors have told you that you do need a machine because they said it cannot be done properly by hand. And he said, well, okay, we'll give you a call. That's when one of the doctors told the commissioner, Fred Lucher built the helmet that was used in the electric chair in South Carolina 2 months ago. And he looked at me and he said, you made the helmet? I said, yes, I did. He said, okay, that's it. He told the doctors, he says, write up the contract. We'll have them make a lethal injection machine. What electrocution has to do with lethal injection, I've yet to figure out. But the point is I had some kind of a track record, and that's where we started. And from there I worked with I was in touch with all of the states that had capital punishment of one form or another. And I worked with them on a close basis. I supplied several lethal injection machines to various states. I supplied a complete electrocution system to the state of Tennessee. I've worked with several states on the use of the gallows. I wrote the protocol that's presently used in the few states that do hangings now. So it's been an interesting stint with all of the states and with all of the procedures, but there's nobody else that I know of that has any background at all in execution equipment. So it required a lot of research on my end. When I started to work with electric chairs, I had to review the early executions in New York. I had to read the medical journals. I had to do the same thing with hanging to determine what's the best length of the drop and how to properly hang somebody. I had to do the same thing with the gas chambers, and then further I had to deal with lethal injection from the ground up because nobody knew how to do it. I not only had to develop a machine, but I had to write the procedure, and that procedure is used except in all of the states, but the states do not use the proper chemicals because they've had problems and they no longer consult with me, so they don't know how to deal with the problem. And that's why they torture so many people.
You had some dealings also, some, I think, man-to-man, up close and personal dealings with the state prison, Missouri State Prison. Didn't he give you a reference for you being an expert on the gas chamber, Fred?
Bill Armentrout, he was a well-known and a very well-respected prison warden. He was a former naval officer. He was in during World War II. I guess he retired as a full commander, and he started a second career as a prison official in the Missouri system. He was at the Missouri State Penitentiary in Jefferson City, and he had been in touch with me because they had a gas chamber that was leaking, and he asked me to come out. I came out, and we smoke tested it, and we determined that it was leaking, and we repaired the gasket on the gas chamber on the doors to stop the leaking, and they wanted a new gas chamber that was safer than what they had, and they gave me a contract to build a complete new gas chamber, which actually consisted of a completely new death house. We were going to have to make modifications because in case of an emergency, an exhaust fan in the roof of the chamber had to start, and it had automatically open ports on the walls, so all of the poison gas would be removed in the event of a leak or in the event of a loss of power. That was going to be a major undertaking. It was a $350,000 job, and the legislature voted to change to lethal injection. And when he told me, I gave him the contract back, and I said, "Send me a contract for lethal injection," and that cut the size of the job down to $32,000. But at any rate, I supplied them with a lethal injection machine. And they were the first ones to do a lethal injection with the machine. It went completely flawlessly. So it was funny. New Jersey had the legislation, and Missouri did the first execution with the machine. Before that, there were several states that did it. They were having all kinds of difficulty because it's not a procedure that's easily done. It should be done by medical professionals, and they have ruptured veins and all kinds of difficulty, and the procedure should not be done unless it's being done by trained EMTs or doctors, and that's why the moment is necessary. But I had worked with all of the states, even in the state of California. One of the major problems with the gas chambers in California had the best gas chamber during the entire 20 years that they didn't have executions in the United States. They were doing gas executions every month, and they were executing a rabbit. So they had their team fully ready to go when they reinstituted the death penalty. And the only place where they had a major problem was the fact that you have to have all death has to be heart death in order to determine if the person being executed, his heart stopped. You have to have a stethoscope on them, and what happened is they put a stethoscope transducer. That's the end that they put on your chest. They tape it to the executee's chest. They run a long tube across to the wall, and then
I've seen that.
On the other side.
I'm sorry to interrupt you. We have to go to our second commercial break this hour. So hold that thought, Fred. People, we'll be right back with Fred's qualifications. Be right back.
Exposing corruption. Informing citizens, pursuing liberty. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
USA News, I'm Dave Collins. Reports say the U.S. shot down a Chinese spy balloon. The balloon was hovering over the U.S. for several days, and the Pentagon was monitoring the entire time. It's not known how the balloon was taken out, but some reports say fighter jets took it out over South Carolina. Brutal cold winds are sweeping across the Northeast, with officials closing schools and activating emergency plans. New Hampshire Governor Chris Sununu warned residents to take the warnings seriously.
We just want folks to really appreciate the intensity of the weather we're going to get so we can be prepared.
Wind chill as cold as 32 below zero will hit much of the region, with frostbite able to take effect in as little as 10 minutes. Democrats are making changes to the 2024 presidential primary calendar.
Iowa is out, South Carolina now in the number one spot. During a Democratic Party gathering in Philadelphia, DNC delegates approved moving South Carolina into the top spot for early voting, followed by Nevada and New Hampshire. And for the first time, Georgia and Michigan joining the primary window. Iowa, which had traditionally been first, not happy with the decision. That new calendar facing opposition from the impacted states and could remain unsettled for months as the DNC works to get it implemented.
That's John Schaefer. A designer on Etsy is closing her site after Beyonce wore the disco cowboy she created on a social media post promoting her upcoming tour. Abby Mispin, who runs the site Trending by Abby on Etsy, told TMZ that Beyonce's team contacted her last summer and requested a handmade mirrored cowboy hat for $215. Mispin usually gets 5 to 6 orders a week, but in one day she got 60 orders. A San Jose police officer recovering after being shot during a standoff late last night, early this morning, is doing well and will recover. This is USA News.
Attention! This is a public notice from the Social Security Disability Helpline. If you're one of the millions of Americans who are disabled and unable to work, you may be eligible for disability benefits from Social Security. Receiving benefits is your right. If you suffer from physical or mental disability, whether you're applying for the first time or you've already been denied, we can help. We'll evaluate your situation and deal with Social Security on your behalf. Best of all, there's no fee until you receive your benefits. Remember, we only get paid if you win your case. There are many reasons and conditions that may make you eligible for disability benefits. Many of them you may not be aware of. So if you're disabled and unable to work, call now to get started with your free, no-obligation consultation.
800-362-9337. 800-362-9337. That's 800-362-9337.
Excuse me, Captain. I know this may sound silly, but can you fly?
Nope. Never had lessons.
Dear Blood River Radio family, listen, we have the man. He is the man in the entire world. He's the only man on the planet that's been recognized by three countries, by the nation of Canada, the nation of the United States of America, and some states in the nation of Germany, recognized as the world's only, not the foremost, but the only expert on gas chambers in the world. That's one Fred Leutcher. And I may add this, Fred Leutcher did that. He went to Germany, Poland, to Dachau, Auschwitz, Belsen, parts there, and found the truth that contradicted, totally contradicted what he believed. He found out that the so-called Holocaust was a stinking lie. He went to Canada on his own. He testified in court, in a federal court in Canada, for Ernst Sundell. His testimony didn't suit the Jews, so Fred paid the price. He lost his livelihood. He lost his chemical engineering firm for what he did. Now, Fred's going back to finish his qualifications. I want you to know, beyond a shadow of a doubt, this man is the man. He's an engineer. He's qualified. The man knows what the hell he's talking about. He's the world's expert. I can't say that enough on gas chambers. He's going to finish up his qualifications, his credentials. Then we're going to go over to Germany, to Dachau. Then we're going to go to Poland, to Auschwitz and Belsen, and these other places. He's going to tell you what he found there. Keep in mind, this is key. The man was a born-again, dyed-in-the-wool Holocaust believer before he went over there. And as an expert engineer in his team, he carried another team over there. They found out. Well, go ahead, Fred. Continue on with your finish up with your qualifications, if you will, Fred.
Okay.
Because I want the people to know that. And then we'll take us over to Dachau in Poland. Go ahead, Fred.
Well, because I'm an expert in all forms of execution used here in the United States, whenever they had a problem with an execution procedure, I would generally be the one that was called in to do the investigation. And one of the major ones, I'm certified in federal court because of it. I testified in the Jesse Tafaro case in Florida, where the state of Florida used a defective electrode, and they actually set Jesse Tafaro's head on fire, and they dropped the voltage low enough, so they boiled his blood as the voltage increased. It was probably one of the most difficult executions that anybody ever had to endure. But as I say, I'm a certified expert in federal court in the United States, in many of the states, the other states, because being a certified expert in federal court, I'm recognized in the other states. I'm recognized in Canada because I was certified in Canada to testify at Zundel's trial. And Zundel, he expected a trial to be coming up for him in Munich, in Germany, which ultimately never happened, but I was brought over there and I was questioned for almost 6 hours by the district attorney and by five judges and by Zundel's attorney, Mr. Rieger. And I was qualified as an expert to testify in Germany. I would have been the only one that did testify in Germany, that could have testified in Germany as to the existence of the gas chambers in Poland. So I'm certified pretty much every place.
That's why we have you here. That's the reason you're here. That is the only reason. I mean, nobody else in the world can do that. So we think we have your qualifications down, Pat. I mean, you know what the hell you're talking about. And Fred, before we go and leave your qualification, now you actually have designed the gas chambers, if I'm not mistaken. Am I right or am I wrong?
Yes. Yeah. I designed a gas chamber for the state of Missouri. And just about the time we were starting to build it, they switched to lethal injection. So I did not build it for them. It was a major undertaking because there had to be major modifications to the actual gas chamber building because in case it leaked or they had problems, they have to be able to evacuate the gas so they don't kill witnesses and guards that are conducting the execution, newsmen and everybody else who would be witnessing the execution. So
That's kind of important. If the guards and the news people start dropping dead, that's kind of bad publicity for the warden there, you know.
But, right. You have to have backup generators and everything. I was inspecting the gas chamber in the state of Mississippi, and I told them if the electricity stops or the fan stops, you're going to be in trouble. The gas chamber is going to start to leak because the Eaton gas chambers, which are the Eaton design, is what everybody in the United States used. It has gas chambers are supposed to leak inward, so you don't get any leak outward. So it's operated at a negative pressure. And but if you lose the fan, it doesn't suck inward anymore. The pressure will equalize, and poison gas from the inside of the chamber will come out into the room where the people are conducting the execution. So I told the warden of that division. It was the state prison division in Missouri. In Mississippi. And he said, "Oh, we don't have any problems. We have never lost power here in the whole history that we've been here." Well, that day there was a tornado. We sat on the stairs of the gas chamber building, and we watched a tornado in the distance going across farming fields. About 10 minutes into the tornado's arrival, all the power went off. And he looked at me and he says, "Oh my God!" He says, "I just got through telling you that couldn't possibly happen." And I said, "Yeah." I says, "Right now," I says, "we would be opening all the doors and running outside and hoping we don't get gassed ourselves."
Never say never, huh, Fred? It's never say never. Right. Never say impossible.
There were a lot of problems. And in the event that that happens, you have to have backup electricity. You got to have a backup generator so that if the gas starts leaking the wrong way, an exhaust fan has to start in the roof of the building. It's got to have enough cubic feet per minute suction to clear the building in less than a minute. And the walls have to open, louvers have to open, so the air can come in from the outside. And the safety procedure, with a new protocol which I wrote, is that if an emergency develops, you stand with your back against the wall, the air comes in, goes over your shoulders and past you and out the roof. And you've got to do that, or else you'll wind up being gassed. Nobody ever had that had a consideration like that anyplace, and they have had problems with chambers leaking. So.
Well, I'll tell you, Fred, I think we've established beyond anybody's doubt, any reasonable doubt, that you are an expert. You're an engineer, a professional engineer. You are recognized by the federal court in the United States as being an expert in gas chambers, recognized by the state of Canada, both country of Canada and Germany. Fred, let's quickly, we've established your credentials, I think, for anyone's satisfaction. Let's briefly go back to Canada. Briefly tell the people what you were doing in Canada, how you wound up with the Ernst Sundell trial, and tell them then how you, from the trial, from what the defense team sending you to Poland and to Germany. So let's go back to Canada, but tell them briefly about Ernst Sundell's trial.
Okay, well, the trial that I participated in was Ernst Sundell's second trial. The first trial, he was found guilty, and the law was the Supreme Court of Canada struck the trial down and ordered a new trial because the problem was that the judge had improperly instructed the jury.
Hey, Fred, what was he found guilty of?
He was found guilty of producing hate material.
What was that hate material? What was it said? Was it Holocaust denial stuff?
It specifically was a pamphlet that was called "Did 6 Million Really Die?" And if you went to London, you could buy the pamphlet for the equivalent of 25 cents in any bookstore. But Canada decided, and it wasn't so much Canada; it was a Jewish lady. Her name was Citrin. She decided that he should be charged for selling it, and she was the one that brought the formal charges. And as I say, he was convicted the first time because the judge instructed the jury that you have to convict him because he's participating in hate material. And the second trial, the first trial they had, they brought in a number of so-called Jewish experts who didn't know anything about what they were talking about. And Hilberg, who wrote The Destruction of the European Jewry, he wrote it's a 5 or 7 volume set of the history of the Jews in Europe, and one of the things he discusses is all these motorized machinery, this mechanized machinery they have for evacuating the gas in the gas chambers, and it was all made out of wood. it was ridiculous, and he was scheduled to testify at the second trial, but when he found out I was coming, he changed his mind and he refused to come.
Well, Fred, with that, hang on to that. We've got to go to our last break for this hour. It's going all too fast. Hang on, Fred. Hang on, audience. We're going back. I think that Fred's tearing it up. I'll be right back.
As you are aware, America is divided over every fault line possible. This is intentionally fostered by those who do not love God, family, or country. We believe a peaceful future as a free people absolutely depends on civility. Clarion Call for Civility is looking for funding and volunteers at every level to make our hopes and efforts a reality. Please donate, sign our pledge, and help us in our sacred cause. Please visit callforcivility.com for more details. callforcivility.com. former sheriff Richard Mack recounts in his book, The Proper Role of Law Enforcement, how he came to realize while working as a beat cop how wrong the all-too-common orientation of police officers is when they think of their job as being to write tickets and arrest people. Richard Mack tells of his personal transformation from by-the-number cop to constitution-conscious defender of citizen safety and freedoms. Learn what it really means to serve and protect. Purchase your copy at CSPOA.org. That's CSPOA.org.
Blood River Radio is the only news media in the United States whose sole purpose of being is to fight against the ever-rising tide of global white genocide, both soft and hard genocide, whether it is in the form of ethnic cleansing via the current massive invasion of non-white, non-Christian hordes that are overwhelming the once all-white nations of Western Europe, the United Kingdom, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, and the United States, or via the hard genocide in South Africa, where the rape, murder, and torture of whites is an ongoing daily occurrence. Though we are a Christian brotherhood, we will cooperate with other groups in our operations if it will shorten our people's casualty list. We further pledge to you to leave the radio studio at every opportunity and take it to our churches, to our universities, and most importantly, we promise to occupy the streets. However, none of our mission can succeed without funding. Please help us all that you can and donate to our cause by going to www.bloodriverradio.com.
What we've got here is failure to communicate. Some men you just can't reach.
Well, dear Blood River Radio, some men you just can't reach. I'm Garen Double Dam to you. People, we're going with Fred Reutcher. We're going to go back to Canada right now to the Ernst Zundel trial. And I think if you're just tuning in, Fred told why he was in Canada. Why was he at this trial? Ernst Zundel was on trial for distributing these little 25-cent copies. You could pay 25 cents for them, get a little pamphlet that did 6 million really die. Ernst Zundel was distributing them in Canada. He was taken into court and tried, you know, for claiming there were such things as gas chambers, and that's where we bled up to. So now we're going to go back. Fred Leuchter, the expert, the world's only expert on the gas chambers, who's called in as the key defense witness, even though he was a dyed in the wool. He believed in the Holocaust. And they hired him and sent him to Poland and Germany later on after this trial or during when the trial was going on. Even though they knew he believed in the Holocaust, they sent him over there because they wanted an honest assessment. So right there, we're back in Canada now at the trial. And Fred, you told them why they were on trial. So continue there, Fred, where you left off.
Well, at any rate, they sent me to Poland, and I went to Poland. I examined the alleged facilities at three concentration camps. The first one was the main camp at Auschwitz. And then thereafter, I looked at Birkenau, which is sometimes called Auschwitz II. It's the second, it's part of Auschwitz, but it's a separate facility. And then after that, I went to Majdanek, which is several hours away on the other side of Poland. And I examined the facilities there. And I wrote an engineering report entitled An Engineering Report on the Alleged Execution Gas Chambers at Auschwitz, Birkenau, and Majdanek, Poland. It was prepared for the trial on April 5th, 1988, and I went to Canada to testify with a copy of it in my hand. It has a lot of details, including the results of samples I removed and tests that were made on the samples that showed
there was... Fred, not to interrupt, but I hate to interrupt, but tell them the lengths that you had to go to, you and your team had to go to. You had to go eat lousy food in Poland. You were under the watchful eyes of guards. If I remember right, you all had to sneak into some of these places after dark, under fences, et cetera. If I remember right, you went into the damn basement with leaking water in the bottom of the basement woods of Auschwitz. Tell them to the length you went to, some of the technicalities, some of the mechanical ways, for instance, drill bits, chisels, chemical kits, et cetera. Tell them a little bit about that, the lengths you had to go to get this evidence. Tell them how you did it, what evidence you got to bring back to the states.
When we were doing the examination at Auschwitz proper, which was in a morgue, which they alleged to be a gas chamber, we had to work around the tours that came in, and we had a lookout, if you will, on each end of the building, and any time the tours were coming through, we had a stop. The rest of the time, I was in there working with the star drill and a hammer and a chisel, chiseling off pieces of the samples. Drawings were made of the facility and locations of where the samples were taken. They were taken in good taste, so they weren't taken from any place that damaged the facility, that you could say I was a vandal. But I mean, we did everything properly, and we took samples. And when we got to Majdanek, when we got to Birkenau, which was sometimes called Auschwitz II, there were four alleged tremors there. Two of them were completely gone. They were red brick buildings on slab, and the Poles stole all the bricks after the war, so there was nothing there to view. The other two facilities and the two that were missing that were destroyed were mirror images of each other, and the two that were not that were still there but had been destroyed by somebody blowing them up. Those facilities were mirror images also, and they had a so-called gas chamber, which actually was a morgue. All of these facilities were morgues, and they had the crematory was up on the ground level, and the morgue, of course, was below ground level because they wanted to keep it cold, and they had to deal with the fact that bodies have to be kept cool, so they can autopsy them or store them till they can burn them. And these facilities were blown up. The general take on it is that they say the SS blew it up at the end of the war, but I personally think that the Russians blew it up because they just wanted to get rid of it. They didn't want anybody looking at it because I think the Russians knew there were no gas chambers and they didn't need it investigated. And I came along right after the Iron Curtain fell. So when the Iron Curtain fell, I was the first person that was able to get in there to look at any of these facilities. And I had to go down underneath the buildings that were blown up. And I had it was difficult because these buildings were dangerous. They were still caving in on themselves, and I was underneath getting the samples. And one of our cameramen said, he said, I don't think you should go down. It's crazy. And I told him, I said that's my job. I got to go down. I have to examine the facility, and the only way I can do it is by going in there. So that's what happened. I was in there, and I did make all the they filmed me in there. They dropped the camera down and they suspended it on a rope, and they were taking pictures of me chiseling away. Some of the places had a foot of water in them, and I was knee deep in water, but I was still getting everything that I needed to get for the samples so I could have them analyzed. After I did that, when I got back, I got the samples back. I wrote the report. I came in. The judge, he was stuck with me. He didn't want me testifying, but he didn't have a hell of a lot of choice because I came with the right credentials. So he accepted me as an expert, but he wouldn't accept the report. Fred, he said, I'll have to testify the report into the record. So even though he had a copy of the report, I had to testify everything that was in the report into the record verbally.
Fred, now you sent some of these samples to other independent laboratories. Is that right? Testing laboratories?
I sent them to a test laboratory in Massachusetts that was recommended by the state. It was the top laboratory in the state. It's Alpha Laboratories.
That's a key point. Fred Leutcher's laboratory. This was an independent laboratory dictated by the state. Continue on, Fred.
They tested the stuff, and even though the head of the laboratory later said that they did the testing wrong because I didn't tell him what he was testing for, that wasn't true. But the bottom line is they did all of the testing was proper and adequate. Any chemist will tell you that. And he was the head of the laboratory, a man named Roth. I believe he was tested by the he was attacked by the Jews because as soon as this was over, he no longer worked at the laboratory and nobody knows where he is. But at any rate,
one last point. I'm going to interrupt one more time. One last key point. Now, when you submitted these samples to that laboratory, you didn't tell him where those samples came from or why you were having him analyzed, did you? He couldn't possibly have been a pro-Nazi, a pro-Holocaust nutcase. He thought he was just testing samples from another building or something. He didn't know what he was doing, right?
No, I told him it was an industrial accident case that involved hydrogen cyanide. That's all.
Great. So people say, well, he was in the hand of the Nazis. He had no idea where these samples came from. He didn't know the truth. Okay, that's key. People have to know. See, he didn't know. So therefore, people can't say, well, he was one of us guys who he was not a Holocaust denier. He didn't know he was working on samples. I'm sorry. I wanted to get that point clear, Fred. Continue on, Fred. Sorry.
Okay. Well, the next problem we ran into was. Is Judge Thomas wouldn't allow me to testify on the crematories because the crematories because I never built one. Now you have to understand that before I went to Poland and I went there to study what they had, I contacted a crematory here not far from my home in Massachusetts, and I made arrangements to work at the crematory. I worked at the crematory. I wasn't paid. I was there as an observer. But I worked with the bodies. I cremated four bodies, and we took the remains out and put them in the machines that crunch the bones. So I was fully familiar with the modern and the ancient, the Germans used the early ways of cremation. They weren't as good as what we have today. As I say, even if we used today, we couldn't have got the throughput that the exterminationist claim we had. But the problem is he wouldn't let me testify because I never built a crematory. And what happened was Doug Christie, his attorney, made arrangements with the top crematory expert in Canada who read my report. He came in and he testified by report into the record every single word, and he testified that Fred Lucha is certainly a qualified expert because everything he says in his report is correct, and none of the numbers that the exterminationists used could possibly have happened. They couldn't have possibly. And as a matter of fact, I spoke in California about a year after that at the Institute of Navigation, Institute of Historical Review meeting, and. I testified at the time, if they actually had to cremate that many bodies, they would have been cremating the bodies until 1996.
Fred, how many bodies can be cremated in a facility like that at one time? We're about to run out of time. Fred, I'm going to hold you over, if you will, because we're going so good. And the second hour... we'll hold you over to the first segment of the second hour in a minute, and maybe we can bring see if Mona has anything she would briefly, because I want to slow you down, to briefly contribute, because after all, we're going to bring you back again on the 25th.
Mona and I have a good interaction. She'll know what questions to ask.
Okay. So we're about to go. But anyway, we're almost up against this end of this first hour. We'll have to transition to the second hour. We're going to hold you over to a segment. At least because this is going too well, and there's no greater lie in history. The Holocaust lie is the linchpin of all lies. If we can destroy that lie to expose it to the world, all the other lies will disappear. 9/11, Oklahoma City, the Gulf of Tonkin, which was my war in Vietnam. All of them. People, hold on to your seats. We're going to hold Fred over and Mona. We're going to have them on to us the first segment of the second hour. And I know you know why. So please don't go anywhere. Get you some coffee or something, but come right back to the radio. Be right back, folks.